This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
And again, many thanks to Carla Williams, who joined us in hour number one. Wes, it's another busy guest hour coming up with Andrea Adelson and Vince Tyree from the University of Louisville. But it's also the first of the month, and we do this every stinking month on the first. We look back at the month that was. The month that was. It's time for a little notepad, PAD, Packer and Durham. So I've had people ask me that. Why you guys do that notepad? What's that, the pad thing? I said PAD, pad, Packer and Durham, notepad. We take notes. We look back to what happened the month before. So that said,
July going to be tough, Pack. How are we going to do July?
Oh, July's going to be great.
Nothing going on.
What are you talking about? We got media days. We go dark for a couple weeks. You know there's going to be stories.
Best offensive player, best defensive player. They're not going to be anybody playing anything, are they?
You wait and see. There will always be something going on. Every time you think it's going to be quiet, there is something going on. I assure you.
That's true. Just look at June, right? Just look at June.
All right, let's do it. No problem.
All right. Start with the best offensive player. Ready? Best offensive player? I cannot believe we both agreed on this. Johnny Butler of NC State.
That was my pick. He was great.
Yep. Johnny Butler of NC State, who hit 300, couple of homers, 12 RBIs, 9 games in June, all in the NCAA tournament. My opinion, when he homered early against Stanford, it set the tone for the Wolfpack, not to mention what he did off Kevin Copps in Fayetteville.
Johnny B was the man.
So
now,
congratulations, Johnny Butler.
Yeah, yep. He had a hot bat when it mattered in June. I just wish they could have played a few more games, if you know what I mean. But I'm not surprised we had that one as the same. All right, I'm going to lead off with the defensive player. And I went with a pitcher. Okay. I want a different angle here. I don't know where you decide to go. But I went with Griff McGarry, who was nothing short of awesome for Virginia. And, man, when they needed somebody to say, hey, pick us up after losing a game, here comes old McGarry. And he was just stupid good. And, of course, the last time we saw him, he had the no-no against the eventual national champion Mississippi State. But, man, alive. He just was just unbelievable, the numbers he put up when it mattered the most. And, you know, Brian O'Connor, who joined us yesterday, talked about the exit meeting he had with Griff and just said, hey, you know, you're really the epitome of what it's all about. You're down the dumps. Things weren't going right. But when it mattered the most, you stepped your game up and just took it to another level. And I think he made some coin, some serious coin in June.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question. I did not pick Griff McGarry, but I did pick a Virginia player. And as it turns out, I picked the only representative of Virginia and NC State on the College World Series All-Tournament team, Nick Kent. I'm struggling with that, but more on that in a moment. I thought Nick Kent was sensational. Young guy making plays. Come on, Pack. I mean, just he got it done, didn't he?
Well, he made a play. That play right here, there. That was just ridiculous how great that play was. But I don't know, Wes, if that's an accurate statement regarding the old College World Series team. You might double-check that one. But Nick Kent played great. There's no question about that. Just saying. We'll put that on your list.
Geloff made the team. Nick Kent did not. Yeah, sorry.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. That's
okay. By the way, how in the world did just Geloff make the team? Not anybody from NC State, not anybody else from Virginia?
Wes.
What in the world?
This is why I don't vote on these kind of things, because it just gets to be goofy. It gets goofy sometimes.
I know. All right, so let's go to biggest story or best story.
Best story.
All right, my best story, NC State beating Arkansas twice in the Supers. To me, you go to Fayetteville, you go in that environment, you're not supposed to win. Jose Torres hits the heroic shot. To me, in the month of June, this was as big as anything happened in Omaha because of who you were doing it against and where you were doing it?
I had three on the brain for this, and I couldn't pick. I wasn't sure which one to go. I thought of that. That was one of the three, but I didn't pick that one. The other two I thought of was Logan Michaels' home run, which I just thought was a storybook, Hollywood script. Dad in the crowd, Father's Day, goes yard for the first time. And I thought Logan Michaels, and I was like, you know what? I ended up picking NC State going 2-0 in the College World Series for the first time. And I think all of these work. I mean, whichever one you picked, I think would have worked. But NC State getting off to a 2-0 start, especially when they beat Leiter, one zip in a great game, and to put themselves in the driver's seat before all craziness started to happen with the COVID stuff. But I thought the Wolfpack being in that position at that point in time, coming off the Arkansas deal, I thought, man, the Wolfpack's got him right where they want him, Elliott and the guys. So a lot to pick from there. That was a tough category, in my opinion. Biggest disappointment, Wes, I'd say, to me, this was an easy one that as gut-wrenching an end to a season by any team ever. It's one thing, I said this the other day on radio, it's one thing that you have a championship-caliber team and you lose on a last-second shot or a guy throws a touchdown pass with no time left. That's one thing. It's another thing when you're a championship-caliber team and you don't even get the opportunity to play. And I think everybody in this league, everybody around the country, felt awful for NC State. The Wolfpack is as ugly an ending as that was, Wes. I think in due time, it will come back to be a benefit to NC State because people are going to realize, man, that was a really good team. And when you watched how feeble Vanderbilt was against Mississippi State, I mean, it's got to cross your mind watching that championship series that NC State would have been a better matchup against Mississippi State. And I'm not saying it because I'm on ACC Network. I'm going to say it again this afternoon on radio. NC State would have been a better matchup. No disrespect to Vanderbilt. You got a great team. But, I mean, gosh, they just didn't get the chance. And I think America will hug NC State down the road with that baseball program for years and years and years to come.
Yeah, I agree with you. So we agree on the disappointments. Biggest surprise, Pac?
Well,
you lead.
I don't have enough time to give you the biggest surprise because they did it again.
They did it again.
I didn't. I'm going to get to my answer here in a second. They did it again. I didn't think it was possible that they could do it again, but they did. The biggest surprise of the month is that the NC2A proved again that just when you think they couldn't take it to a lower level in terms of incompetence, they did. And what happened with NC State in Omaha and that 2:10 a.m. press release, and that's all we're going to say about it. I mean, we're sitting here on July the 1st on a Thursday, 5 days after the fact, and you still haven't heard a peep.
Haven't said a word.
Not one word. I am surprised because I didn't think the NCAA could screw things up more than they had until Saturday morning at 2:10 a.m. So they made my list as the biggest surprise. Not that we knew that they would screw something up, but not like that. That was one for the ages. So NCAA, tip of the cap for your incompetence.
Yeah, nice. My biggest surprise, and we mentioned it earlier because he was your best defensive player. Well, he's my biggest surprise, and that's Griff McGarry, because there was not one thing going into the month of June that would lead you to believe that Griff McGarry was going to be what he was at the end of the month. And what he is a considerable prospect in the draft a week from Sunday on the 11th. He is a considerable prospect. I don't know if he's first or second round, but I think it won't be long after that for Griff McGarry. Going to be interesting to see kind of how things turn out for the young man who was sensational in Omaha but was sensational in Columbia in both sets of regionals. So congratulations to Griff McGarry. Best game. I am going to take NC State's 1-0 win against Vanderbilt in Omaha as the best game. Now, you can take your pick on all this, but there are a bunch of these to go through. You can go through the Grand Slam win for Virginia, all those things. But I'm taking the former Apex Cougar Sam Heifel and the Wolfpack strapping the Commodores 1-0, Pack.
That's a classic old-school game, too. I loved it. Being a baseball nut, yep. that was a rock'em sock'em. Hey, anybody get to second base, good luck. Now can you figure out a way to get them home? Yep. And the answer was no, you cannot. Somebody better go yard.
Yep.
Pitching was great. Sam Heifel was awesome. Tremendous game. My pick, though, was not that game, even though I thought about it. But I went back to one you'd mentioned earlier. Omaha does not happen unless you figure out a way to solve the Arkansas riddle. And after 21-2, it was not looking good on a Friday night. You win a one run game on Saturday, and then all of a sudden you got the loser leave town match in Arkansas. Nobody all season long had touched the Hogs, beating them in a series. NC State did, but Torres go ahead home run in the ninth off the best pitcher in college baseball. In that environment was sensational. So I went NC State's win against Arkansas as the best game of the month.
There you go. Good. I like it. Well, nicely done on Notepad. I can't wait to see what we do for July.
July's going to be great. Now, why are you worried about July? I mean, we're going to take half the month off, right? You and
there
I.
There are no games.
Well, there's always something to talk. Let me tell you something. Something will be said or done in Charlotte July 21 and 22 that will have us buzzing. Yeah. It happens every year. There will be a player that says something. A coach will say something. Maybe me and you say something. Who knows? But there will be a buzz about something that was said in Charlotte on 21-22. Are there any games? No, there's no games. Well, that's okay. Still doesn't mean you can't have some juice. We'll have that.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Name, image, and likeness is in play. Effective midnight last night or this morning.
Yeah.
844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. Andrea Adelson is back with us. What's the matter?
I bet we can get Andrea Adelson wrapped up in some of that Packer and Durham name, image, and likeness stuff. I bet she'll jump right on in.
Well, I mean, she's got her own name, image, and likeness issues. She doesn't have to worry about us. You gotta worry about yourself now. It's all about it's inward now, Wes. It's all about the individual. That's what it's all about.
Well, let's go live to Florida. Parts unknown in Florida. Here's Andrea Adelson, who has a story that came out at midnight last night. Law, it becomes law, and Andrea Adelson's got the story on Mackenzie Milton and De'Eric King. I'm sure Milton may have something else. De'Eric King, it's one of two or three different things it seems like he launched at midnight. Andrea, a little background if I can, first of all. How do some of these student athletes, De'Eric and Mackenzie, I guess in particular in your case, or some of these others, construct these deals then to be launched at midnight? In other words, some of that just didn't get done midnight and at 12:05 we're rolling. So how long do you think some of this stuff has been in the works for some of these kids?
The thing in the state of Florida is we've known this legislation has been coming down the pike for July 1st, right? Florida was the first state to say July 1st, 2021, you can start making money. So these athletes have had a head start over maybe some others that didn't have state law in place and were waiting on the NCAA to come out with something, which was yesterday, the day before July 1st. So that gave a lot of athletes in the state of Florida, I think, a real advantage. And so, yeah, obviously, this is a months-long process. It doesn't just happen right at midnight, because everybody knew starting at 12:01, they could sign their paperwork for it to be official. That's why you saw some deals get announced at 12:01. That's why the story about Mackenzie and De'Eric came out at 12:01. There's nothing illegal about talking to people about potential deals. It was, okay, let's talk. Let's see what we can do. And once 12:01 comes around, let's get that DocuSign out. And it's fairly simple. The DocuSign gets sent over to the athlete. They sign it. It gets electronically sent back to the company, and you're in business.
Dreamfield, it's really a great idea. I wish I came up with it. You know, you start booking live events for student athletes, and you know, the thing I love about all of this, Andrea, is for folks who are creative and have an entrepreneurial spirit, I mean, really, the sky is the limit here. This is such an untapped universe. And I know there's still a lot of people that are uncomfortable with 18 to 22-year-olds basically having the ability to do it. But I think it's fantastic. I think it's going to spearhead all kinds of cool things they're going to spin off it. Now, how that affects, you know, how you play on the field, what's the team look like, I have no idea. I think that's what the nervous part for the fans, I think, is that department. Don't you? That, oh, man, hey, my favorite team is school X, and what's it going to be like if my quarterback's making six figures and my wide receiver's making five and the offensive line doesn't have enough money to get together to order a pizza? I mean, how's that going to affect my team, right? That's what makes fans nervous. But for the individuals in college, my goodness, there are incredible opportunities here.
No doubt about that, Pac. And that's one of the biggest reasons why Mackenzie and Derek decided to partner with Dreamfield, because they can have an equity stake in the company. They're the face of the company. They can bring on other athletes to be able to make some of their own deals with live events, and also this emerging NFT market, which I'm not going to lie, I had to read up about NFTs, which are essentially digital sports trading cards. We've seen heavy success with well-known guys like Patrick Mahomes and Rob Gronkowski, and there hasn't been an active collegiate athlete be able to do it until now. And so this is an area that Dreamfield wants to go in as well. Mackenzie's going to have his first NFT come out next week. Derek is going to have one. They're hoping to sign on some other quarterbacks to be the college version of Tops, where they can offer digital trading cards through the NFT market. And that's just one of these creative ways that you just mentioned to take advantage. Yeah, there are going to be some guys who are going to get endorsement deals, and gals who are going to get endorsement deals, and who are going to be able to do an autograph signing, get paid to run a camp. You know, those are the more traditional things. But I'm most interested in to see what are the non-traditional avenues where some of these players can go down, because there's so much out there in the tech markets, especially for young people, that to me, watching how that develops is going to be huge. And I think once people start to understand and realize that this is part of college sports now, I think there'll be a greater level of understanding of what it means for everybody, and it's going to become accepted and normalized, right? In the NFL, everybody makes a different salary, and people don't really worry about the offensive lineman who doesn't get paid as much as the quarterback, how that's going to affect the team. So I think the unknown right now is what's most scary for fans. But once people start to see that, okay, maybe it's not that big of a deal if a player has a deal for a digital training card and goes out to the local restaurant to have a signing, and it might not affect the team in that regard. I can tell you this, you know, tonight here in Tallahassee, which is where I am, there is going to be the first live event that Mackenzie Milton is going to be at over at the Miller's Ale House, and he's going to have some teammates there with him. So it's not as if it's just going to be, I'm in this for me. Yeah, a lot of it is part of that, but I think part of what appeals to Mackenzie and Derek with Dreamfield in particular is they want to be an advocate for other athletes, to find opportunities for athletes who maybe aren't the star quarterback to be able to find ways to make some money as well. And that's why they've signed on, and they're both doing an event tonight where their teammates are going to be a part of it as well.
Okay, Andrea, here's kind of the, let me see if I can fraction the business acumen out of this. So Dreamfield is doing a digital trading card. It's a little like a cryptocurrency type deal. You don't really see it, touch it, hold it. And they're going to do an event with teammates, and we're going to do a card signing, but it's a digital card, so I'm not quite sure how I sign the card, but I'm 55 and I don't have to worry about it. If somebody's 12 or 15 or 18, they'll probably be pretty pumped up about it. Let's get to the money here. We know that it's reported that King got 20 grand for college hunks hauling junk. Bubba Bolden's also in that. That's really about the only number we've heard so far. Do we know any of the ceiling financially here early on NIL for some of these student athletes?
We don't know that yet, and I think that's going to start to trickle out as more announcements are made over the next week, and we're going to see some big-time announcements for some high-profile women's college basketball players I know coming down the pike, especially those who are influencers, maybe not on Twitter, maybe on Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok. Again, there are so many different avenues on the social media for these players to have their brands. I know there's a gymnast at LSU who's looking to make some money off of her name, image, and likeness. That's going to be a potential big deal as well. So I don't think we know what the ceiling is going to be until we start to see what a lot of these deals are going to be. I know, you know, in the NFT market, for example, and again, I'm just starting to learn about this, and we don't know what the market is going to be for collegiate athletes, but Luka Garza came out with an NFT right after he was done with the NCAA tournament and his college career was done that went for something like $41,000. So that's just a small sample at the potential for what something like an NFT could be worth. But in terms of some of the bigger deals, I do think that those who have large followings, especially on social media, especially on TikTok, which is reaching that younger demographic that all businesses do like to reach, I think the potential for very big deals is out there, and we'll know a lot more about that in the next couple of days.
Call me crazy, Andrew, but I think 3 or 4 years down the road, we won't even think about this. It's just going to be a common occurrence. That, I mean, I know it's a big deal now because it's brand spanking new, and we're jumping in the pool for the very first time in name, image, and likeness. But I think this thing is going to be great for the student athletes who are able to at least generate some revenue. But at the end of the day, I think we're just going to go about our business like, well, surely this has been going on for 100 years. No, it just started in 21. I may be dead wrong about that. And I'm also curious to see what percentage of the 500,000 student athletes truly have an opportunity to generate some revenue. I still think that number is going to be relatively small.
I also agree with you, Pac. I think this is just going to be ingrained in what college sports is all about. It's not going to be strange to see the star quarterback in a Gatorade commercial or, you know, endorsing some other product, no matter what it is. It's just going to be like, yeah, okay, like we see NFL and NBA players who are in commercials, we're going to see college players who are going to be taking advantage of that. And it's been a long time coming, right? I mean, other 18 to 22-year-olds on campuses are allowed to be entrepreneurs, have businesses, make money off of whatever they're doing. This is just the next step in the progression of student-athletes' rights, so to speak. And I know there are those who are maybe a little bit uncomfortable with it right now because they have scholarships and they have access to all of this other stuff that the general student body doesn't have access to, and that's considered money, right, that they've earned because they're on a free ride to school. But the fact that these schools are making millions and millions of dollars off of these players to run their athletic departments and their universities means that they should at least deserve a cut of that money. And that's what everybody's has to coalesce around, because that's what the reality is. There's no turning back. We're not going back in time. This is what it is starting today, a historic day in college sports. And once people start to see that the world isn't going to fall apart around them when athletes start to make money off their own names, then I think it's going to be second nature. That, yeah, this is just what it is. This is what college athletes are going to do. And I'm with you. I don't know how many athletes are going to be able to capitalize, but if you are a random college athlete and you are going to get paid a couple hundred bucks to sign an autograph or to work a camp or to do something else where you can make a little bit of money, well, that's a little bit more that you made under the old system. And then that becomes worth it.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these players now are going to have to work on branding, their social media followings, because that's going to be a large part of it. And you guys know as well as I do that social media, especially for some schools, has kind of been frowned on, and maybe coaches don't want them to do that. That's going to change too, because these players are going to have to be engaged on social media to get those followings to show that, yeah, I'm worth it for you to be able to sign me up to endorse whatever you want me to do.
Yeah, good points. Great stuff online at ESPN.com. You can read all about Mackenzie Milton and De'Aaron King cannonballing into the pool of name, image, and likeness at midnight, if you will. Andrea, thank you. We'll see you in Charlotte, less than 3 weeks away. Look forward to it.
Can't wait to give you guys a big hug when I see you. It'll be a great time.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Thursday, July 1st.
Yes, sir.
Obviously, name, image, likeness, front and center across the board. We do appreciate Andrew Adelton, who just joined us from Tallahassee. Mm. Big news breaking there with student athletes taking advantage of the opportunity because of the state law, good to go in the state of Florida. And many thanks to Carla Williams, the University of Virginia, who's running the show. Now we head to Louisville. And if I had anything to do with it, this segment would be sponsored by Woodford Reserve, Packer and Durham, University of Louisville, and Vince Tyre. Could not be a better case scenario. That's how name, image, and likeness should work for us dudes. That's the way it's supposed to work for us. Vince, what's happening?
Should have been the first sponsorship announced at 12:01.
No doubt. No doubt. Because yeah. I tell you what, I would have been there to welcome them with one ice cube and going, man, this is going to be a great, great relationship. I guarantee you.
Well, I can't speak to how many brands would perfectly fit our student athletes, but I know Woodford Reserve would fit your brand.
Thank you.
That's true.
Thank you very much.
Brought to you by Dish, another one.
Brought to you by Dish, who's on the show. All right, so how does this morning feel from another morning in your athletic administrative career? Is it different, or are you just kind of sitting there saying, okay, let's see what's next, or how's this going?
No, I think, so far so good, but there's going to be, a lot of questions, obviously, people are asking coaches, student athletes, and I think that's where it's going to be for quite a while. But, you're up late last night, answering questions to probably around 11 o'clock or so, and then, here we are in Derby terms, they're off. And I think everyone is kind of sorting out, what they think the opportunities are for themselves. They've been doing it up to this date. And now we're going to see it come into play. We have already, I think, with some of the news nationally and so forth with some of the student athletes. And I think it's just a sign of things to come. It was inevitable. And now we have to embrace it.
Vince, as far as the educational process, every student athlete's eyes are going to get big. Oh, I got a chance to make money. There's more to it than that. And Carla Williams talked about, expressing, hey, there's a balance in your athletic life, your educational life, and whatever you decide to do from a business perspective. What have you done at the University of Louisville from an educational standpoint with all your student athletes moving forward that, hey, there will be opportunities, but you better figure out a way to do it?
Yeah, well, I think we, going back over well over a year, we actually put a class in our sports administration program here to assist with name, image, and likeness. We created a law clinic that's available to both students and student athletes alike to help them. We've worked with the business school on a number of initiatives, particularly around social media and marketing and so forth. So we got experts on campus. There's a lot of subject matter experts right here on campus. I don't think we had to travel far to think about how we leverage where we are on a higher ed campus. And so we've tried to use them as well as our own internal resources. Matt Banker, our associate AD, is kind of the point person for this and has been leading the charge. And it's going to be education, and just making sure that they do the best they can. There's going to be mistakes made without a doubt, but the real requirements are, disclose the deals, the contracts, and pay taxes. Other than that, it's going to be interesting.
All right. You were on the private business side for a long, long time before pivoting back into athletics. What do you think the value is of this? You've run businesses. You sense the value, especially in your market now. And I know Pac talked about this on his radio show a couple of days ago. There are certain markets in this country, Vince, and you're in one of them, where University of Louisville is the pro sports in town. I know you have minor league sports and other things there, soccer, whatnot, baseball, but you guys are the sport in town. That's the marquee events. The value for your student athletes might be entirely different than, say, it would be in, Atlanta, Georgia, or someplace else of a metropolitan state.
I agree with that, too. I think it's just, in this instance, we're probably fortunate due to geography and the fact that there's not, all the major league sports here. It is Proville. And that when you land and walk through the airport with all the signage and as you go through town, there's really, the red and black is well represented throughout the city. billboards. Our athletes are on sides of buildings. You know, so we're able to get premier space inside of what I've, you know, we're not a Chicago or New York, but Louisville is a second tier city that acts like a first tier city with when it comes to athletics. And, you know, that's mm-hmm. going to avail some opportunities that may show up in time. But I think to your point on the business front, you know, having tried to work endorsements in my past, you know, people are thoughtful about watching the market. Some of the bigger companies, yeah, they'll take a flyer on a kid here or two, but some of them are going to wait and see how this plays out to see what they think their real return is going to be. And there'll be some interesting deals, but I do think there could be some more interesting deals to come as companies have a better chance to vet those individuals and their athletes and what they're about personally, because they're not going to put out a big check on a flyer. You rarely see that with professional athletes. I don't know that we'd see it right away with college athletes, but I could be wrong.
Vince, I asked Carla Williams this same question. I'm curious what your answer is going to be. How do you police this? How do you make sure that, hey, you know, somebody doesn't get an advantage that you hear of, you know, as opposed to, hey, we could have done the same thing, but we can't because state laws are different. Maybe whatever you came up as far as the rules and regulations you're going to file at the University of Louisville. So how do you police this big picture?
Well, I think part of it is the education, you know, on the front end. You got to do quite a bit to let them know what the boundaries are on what they can do and try to keep them within it. But the biggest thing is, use an athletic term, it's teamwork. I mean, it literally is going to take all the constituents involved. We're certainly going to track their activities as best we can publicly because they're generally not going to make any money unless they engage and complete some activity, whether it be an appearance at a wedding or a birthday party or be on a billboard. So I think having our team as well as, you know, coaches, I would even say fans and boosters are going to be well aware of what's going on. So a lot of it's going to be brought to our attention. And I think if the ones that may, you know, say the old, you know, under the table black market, to use those terms, that may have gone on, are probably going to be more on top of the table today and more visible.
There is a lot of speculation that one of your student athletes could be one of the premier NIL earners in women's basketball, and Haley Van Lith. How does that work in y'all's world? I mean, that's where she's got to tell you what at least it is. You've got to kind of approve it and then move forward, right?
Yeah, so we've worked closely with Haley and her family to make sure they're well aware of the process and the look. These guidelines and so forth have been fluid, as you guys know, and they'll continue to be.
Yeah.
When you got difference between what the federal legislation that to come may look like versus our state mandate here versus the NCAA. So all we're trying to do is tell them these are the general guardrails of what's going to be happening. I think she's going to be incredibly protective of her brand. She's got great advisors around her family, and we're certainly trying to help all we can. But there, you know, we're limited to as to how far we can go, but we're providing all the input or advice we can. And I'm pretty comfortable she's going to monetize herself quite well.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And while this is a completely, totally different universe for all parties, administrators and student athletes, it's got to feel like, hey, we're kind of getting back to normal when you realize, hey, we're back at 100% capacity and everybody can come to a Louisville game and enjoy themselves again. That's got to feel good.
No, I agree. I don't want to hear somebody, 20 rows from me as clear as I could last year yelling at a ref. I want to hear our band and the fans and noise and everything else. But yeah, it's going to be different going back to particularly, these games in the fall that get going. I can't wait to get to our opening game against Ole Miss down in Atlanta. It's going to be really just refreshing.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the Labor Day night game because Miami plays Alabama on Saturday. You guys go in on Monday night, and I was talking to someone tied to the Atlanta Sports Council the other day. It's my understanding that your allotment has moved well past expectation for Labor Day night, right?
you know, it was an interesting time slot, Wes, because, you know, on a Labor Day night, people generally got to go to work the next day and have that late kick. You know, pretty concerning. Ticket sales, I think, for both Ole Miss and us started off a little slow and then have picked up steam. And I think, you know, we've written a lot of permission slips to get people out of work Tuesday, so hopefully they'll come down there and watch the game.
I tell you what Atlanta better do. They better make sure the light bulbs work, because I think there's going to be a lot of points in that game, boss man. I'm going to tell Vince, that one just kind of feels like first to 45 wins, because both of those teams offensively should be really, really dynamic.
Well, certainly we know Lane's history of scoring points, and even last year, and Scott Satterfield, our head coach, has a, you know, dynamic offense, has for years, and we've got some players to match it again this year. So, yeah, it's going to be we're looking forward to it. You know, a lot more depth for us on defense, and obviously we got Malik Cunningham back at quarterback, and he's able to light up the scoreboard as well.
All right, I want to follow up. We were just talking about this with Carla, in a sense. You were very kind with your time with us a year ago when we were out in this gray area of the unknown. What do you think you learned a year ago that helps you going forward?
Well, that's a good question. I'll give you the businessman answer. I think we learned a lot of focus and organization. You know, we've had that here, but, you know, those are times where even when you're doing calls like this on a, you know, you're doing Zoom calls and team calls, you're not lingering around in a conference room or lollygagging around. You're on a call and you're on there to get stuff done. You know, very regimented agendas. I think it forced organization of meetings to have agendas, have timelines, meet them, and get a lot done. And I think that availed us. As most know, we were active early in our changes here and cost cutting and so forth. You know, we started in late March of 20 and really wrapped up the first week of April what our plans were and executed from there. So that really helped us. I think that some of that we've carried forward, be frank. We became really efficient in some areas. The athletic department's operating way more efficient than we did prior to the pandemic. And I don't want to say that we were loose or sloppy or fat or whatever thing else. I just think it really, you really got to focus on the highest priorities when you have limited funds and going to have limited staff to some degree.
I'm just going to leave you with this. Be sure you have one single ice cube on me for July 4th. All right. The first one's on me.
Always. Without a doubt. I got the single cubes in the freezer, as you imagine, Mark. So yep. We pull those out on a regular basis.
There you go. That's why you and I connect. We have a language just amongst ourselves here. We get it.
Code Brown.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah. Vince, always appreciate it. We'll see you soon. Hopefully sooner than later, right?
Thanks, guys. Yes. Love talking with you guys. Appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. You bet. Vince Tyrae, the athletics director, University of Louisville. Always appreciate his insight. Pack, I think Louisville is a different market. I think Louisville is a market that he mentions where the void of pro sports, majors pro sports, really creates opportunities, name, image, and likeness for those athletes. I think the Commonwealth of Kentucky does. I think there are also spots in the ACC where, you know, even in major metropolitan markets. And we talk about one of the ACC's benefits being that it leads Power Five in major television markets. Now, it doesn't have to be centrally located, but major television markets that fall in this conference footprint. That's one of the ACC's big bell cows when it comes to television coverage. The second part of it is, though, the ACC has Tallahassee, Florida, Louisville, Kentucky, South Bend, Indiana, which is more Chicagoland as you look at it. Charlottesville and Blacksburg, which are also tied to the quote Richmond area, Roanoke area. Not to mention what the four schools in North Carolina do. Clemson, and it's tied to not only Greenville, Spartanburg, but also Columbia and Charleston. I think it's going to be interesting to watch and see how the regionalization of this league that you and I have known for years now starts to move with this law coming on board.
Well, I had an interview. I was on with Mark Ennis up in Louisville, does a great job. We talked about this very topic. And the thing that makes the ACC unique is you can go from one end of the spectrum to the other as far as market size. I mean, when you start talking about, hey, you got Miami, Florida, you got Atlanta, Georgia, you got Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you've got Boston, and it's all tied into markets of ACC teams. Then you could go the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of rural markets, Blacksburg, Virginia, Clemson, South Carolina. It's got a chance to be a little bit of everything. And what works at Louisville may not work at Syracuse. What works in Charlottesville maybe doesn't work in Atlanta. So all of this is going to be different. Not only are the state laws different, the schools are different. The personalities are going to be different. I just think folks need to be a little more open-minded and embrace, hey, change has happened. It's not happening. It's happened. And so this is the new world. So you better enjoy it. And if you don't like it, maybe you find something better to do. But I just think it's great for the student athletes to be able to maximize name, image, and likeness, especially if we can figure out a way from a legal standpoint that everybody's above board here. The thing that concerns me is how do you police all this? People are always looking for an advantage in some shape, way, or form. That concerns me when you have no leadership in the NCAA. States are operating at a different level. Schools are operating at a different level. So in the short term, that is a concern from my perspective. We'll see how it goes.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
It's a Thursday.
Yes, sir.
I just looked this up.
July 1st.
Right.
Still July 1st.
Right. True. I just looked up Vince Tyree mentioned Code Brown. I did not know this. I just looked it up. I just looked it up during the break. Code Brown is external emergency. That may be absolutely spot on, Code Brown. Just saying. For us, that may absolutely be spot on. Well. Little does Vince know, he is right on the money. Are we going back to Bristol? We're going back to the Voice of Victory?
Yes.
Of
there
Victory.
There he is, yes.
Tossing grenades. That's what he does right there.
That's it. Yes.
Josh Macri, what's happening?
All right, guys. A couple more predictions here for the 2021-22 academic season. We clipped off your first answers. Go ahead, Wes.
Blake James coming up in the next hour, in case you missed it from the other day. You being a native of Maine, do we know where Blake James was in Maine the other day when we did the interview, by the way?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you might have known as a Maine native. Continue on. Sorry.
You think I could just recognize the tree line?
I know that lake.
No, I thought you might have...
It's like Shawshank Redemption. You know, there's a piece of volcanic rock that has no business being there.
As a member of the Pine Tree State, I recognize that pine tree. That would be Lake Mineola.
That's in Cumberland County.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right, let's get to predictions. Let's do it.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Speaking of stuff that was talked about a couple days ago, or yesterday actually, Seth Greenberg said that Virginia Tech could be the team to beat in men's basketball in the year ahead. Go ahead, Wes.
He said that before Tyrese Radford announced he was into the portal yesterday afternoon.
He did, but either way, your bold prediction on where Virginia Tech will finish this men's basketball season.
I don't think they'll win it. I say Mike Young's team will finish with a lot of popcorn and I'm going to say they'll finish in the top five of the league. I'm not going to guarantee the double bye. I'm going to say top five.
I'm going to go double bye again. I think they go back-to-back double bye. I'm buying.
Wow. Okay.
Yep, I'm buying.
All right.
Need to know if Radford is not a member of the team, as evidenced by yesterday, I'd like to know a little bit more about the rebounding side of the game and how comfortable they are because – you know, look, when he was on the floor, he slashed, but he was also great at the rim and great around the glass at both ends. Aluma drifts at times. We talked about that last winter. That's the only concern I have about keeping Virginia Tech at four or five is where are those rebounding numbers going to come from? But they're going to be good. There's no doubt about that. Castle's going to be a tough spot to play in too, by the way.
I've got another bold prediction. We're going to run out of time. We're going to run out of time to have more bold predictions. That's going to be my prediction.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.